Hi, I'm Ella Sean, reluctant romance writer and host of Enchanted Beast Podcast. Welcome to the Enchanted Forest.
So I was out shopping alone, which of course meant I had absolutely no one to ask, "You think I should get this?" Or to tell me, "Girl, you know you're just impulsively buying this stuff." I was so confused, conflicted even, because honestly, everything I tried on looked amazing on my body. But my mind was like, "Girl, please stop trying to find a reason to spend your coin. Don't you hate when your body tells you one thing, but your mind is in total disagreement? What if my indecisions cost me more than just my extra spending change? What if it cost me something I can never really get back?" I know. We'll talk about it. Hello, my enchanted beast. How are you? So, I'm a little behind getting this episode recorded, but, you know, Friday was the 13th and there was a full moon. Need I say more? I'd love to hear about any strange occurrences that happened on your Friday the 13th. So, be sure to call in to my show using the Anchor app, and I'll be sure to include your comments on the next show, which will air on Friday. I don't think we have another full moon coming up anytime soon. So, I'm happy to be back in the Enchanted Forest with you. And this week I am attacking this idea of mind over matter. I'll tell you why. Okay, this is where it started. I'm a romance writer, you guys know that. And I've been kind of focusing on like making sure that I'm not just putting arbitrary types of conflict in my writing, cliche hackneyed conflicts, right? And I was doing some research and I found this woman who is a book blogger in Brazil. And she has this whole big write-up on treacherous body syndrome. So if any of you read romance, and I hope you do, there is this idea, right, that a woman is in a situation where she doesn't really want to engage in sexual activity. And her mind is like, "No, this isn't right for you. Don't do it." But my treacherous body reacts and responds to his touch. And all logic flees my mind. And I was just so over it, right? Because I'm thinking, really, is it that difficult to follow your mind and do what's right for you? And so I started thinking about women and like how we respond mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually to sexual arousal. And that led me down a rabbit hole, guys. I'm not even going to lie. It led me down a rabbit hole looking at biological responses, psychological responses, societal and cultural responses. Like I think I could possibly write a thesis on a woman's sexual response and how her mind can play a huge role in determining just how far she's going to go. So anywho, I started looking at this as kind of like, when would a woman, at like what point in the whole, you know, sex part, right? When a woman's getting ready, you know, she's with a guy or a girl or whoever she's with, when she's with her partner, at what point would her mind most likely say, this isn't really what you want to do right now? And then why would she not be able to put the brakes on it, right? And I know, like, immediately it's like, well, what about rape victims? But see, that's a whole different thing, right? Because rape is not consensual at all. So there is no buildup. There is no kind of, oh yeah, I was kind of into it, but then no. So I'm talking about sex in what is considered safe, sane, and consensual environments, right? But at what point during the whole process would a woman's mind most likely say, put the brakes on, this isn't really working for you? And what might cause that? So that's where I started my research, okay? Now, I had no idea that there was this thing called a sexual response cycle. I know, women just can't get away from cycles, but apparently, you know, men have these sexual response cycles as well. So yay, they get one too. But it's like, it's a thing. And basically what it is the sequence of physical and emotional changes that occur as a person becomes sexually aroused, right? So for further references, I'll just refer to the sexual response cycle as SRC. Now, when I looked at it, it made me think a lot about the plot diagram. You guys remember back in like middle school, junior high, when you had the whole plot diagram, introduction, rising action, climax, falling action, denouement, or resolution? Okay, I know my writer's brain is always active. I'm always in writing mode. So, but the SRC is very much like that plot diagram, which is weird. So there are four phases in the SRC, right? In the sexual response cycle. The first phase is excitement. Okay. And the second phase is called the plateau phase. Third phase is orgasm. And the fourth phase is resolution. So really, it has all the basic parts of a plot diagram, right? Except resolution and falling action kind of, you know, all boil down into one thing, right? So four phases in the cycle. Now, I mean, this is just a side note, but I think probably most men are only interested in putting time and effort into maybe two of those phases, right? So I'm going to go with the second and the third. Those are the areas where most men are going to put their focus, because that's very tactile and that's where, you know, they derive most of their pleasure. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say most women would probably prefer more effort in the excitement and the resolution phase. And just hold on to that, right? Because as I continue with this episode, it will make sense. So just hold on to that. Men, their focus is on the second and third phase, the plateau and the orgasm. A woman would really love more effort, more time, more energy in phase one and four, the excitement and the resolution phase, right? So let's get started. Before we even start talking about like the phases explicitly, I think it's so important to know that the body is freaking dope, right? So here's what happens. Like when you are in a state of, you know, even anticipating sexual activity, like the beginning phases of sexual arousal, your body drugs you. Like it floods your system with hormones and chemicals to make you want to engage in sexy time, right? So Like, a lot of people are familiar with the drug ecstasy. And everybody knows it's just like, you know, increases serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin, all this other stuff, and makes you super horny and super uninhibited and super like, ooh, I want to be your friend, right? But here's the kicker. Your body naturally makes all that stuff. And sexual arousal, your body floods with this stuff, right? It floods with this. So you are naturally drugged when you become sexually aroused for the sole purpose of engaging in sex. So what are the chemicals and the hormones that, you know, are kind of like flooding your system? First, we get adrenaline. And that causes an increase in your heart rate and your blood pressure. It pushes blood into, you know, your more active muscles, right? So your blood vessels constrict, and then it pushes the blood flow into other areas of the body. It also causes that kind of fight or flight reaction. So you're on the precipice, right? Because that fight or flight, it's not necessarily, you know, oh, I'm afraid. No, it's kind of excitement meets anxiety. And that's where the sweet spot is, right? That's where the sweet spot is. So you're on the edge, right, of adrenaline when these drugs start pumping in your system, right? When your body starts flooding itself with the feel-good stuff. And then you get extra doses of dopamine. And this is the reward-driven, pleasure-seeking chemical, right? So it's like when you accomplish something, you get a burst of dopamine and you feel like, yay, I did that. And you want to get more dopamine. So you keep doing whatever it was you did and you keep accomplishing things. So this is the reward and the pleasure-seeking chemical that your body is flooded with during sex or during arousal, which is great because it's like every time you're touched, you get a burst of dopamine and you're like, ooh, I need to do that again. I need to do more of that so that I can get more dopamine, right? Right. So, and then there's oxytocin. That's a hormone. This is directly linked to human bonding. The more oxytocin flooding your system, the more you gravitate towards wanting to belong, you want to cuddle, you fall in love, you feel safe, you want to be touched. And I mean, that's a great cocktail if you want hot, steamy sex. And this is what your body does to you at the first hint of sexual arousal. It starts pumping your system full of adrenaline, dopamine, and oxytocin. So already your mental ability, your thought process is compromised, right? Already you're not thinking clearly at the beginning of sexual arousal. So there is somewhat a mental disconnect, like you check out mentally. And of course, we can only assume that, you know, the farther along in the sexual response cycle we get, the less mental capacity we probably have, right? So let's talk about the first phase, excitement. Now, again, if this were the plot diagram, this is where the introduction would be. So this is where we meet the characters, we see where they are and what's going on with them, right? If I'm writing a book, when I'm writing a book, I like to give a lot of backstory. I like to make sure that my readers understand who my characters are, their initial motivations, what their initial conflicts are. I like them to know where they're coming from. I like them to know a little bit about their culture, right? What they look like, how they move. Like, I want to make sure that in the introduction of any piece I'm writing, whether it's a novel, a short story, a novella, whatever, I want to make sure that in the introduction, I give enough information so that when stuff begins to build and there's more winding up in the rising action, like it's not coming out of left field and my reader isn't saying, wait, who the hell is that? Where did that come from? Wait, why are they upset again? I didn't get any hint of that before, right? So the introduction is really the most important part of the story. It's one of the most important parts of any piece of writing. And it should, right? It should last longer than a couple of chapters, in my opinion. So let's flip this back to the sexual response cycle. The first phase is excitement. Most of us call that phase foreplay. And ladies, can we be honest? Can we be honest? Most times foreplay lasts about between 0 and 3 to 5 minutes, right? This is usually the shortest amount of time in the SRC. But I'm going to go out on a limb here. It's not really a limb. I mean, this is a whole damn tree. If more time was spent in the excitement phase, right? Then the reality is the entire story, the entire narrative of the sexual experience is going to be better. So what happens in this phase? Usually we get a lot of muscle tension, right? We're tense, our muscles tense. The heart rate quickens, your skin may become flushed, right? You get a little warm, right? If you're fair skinned or, you know, if you're white, then you're probably gonna change colors. You get some rosiness wherever you are, right? I'm not a fair skinned person. I'm kind of brown, but I still get rosy and splotchy in certain places, right? Nipples become hardened or erect. Blood flows to the genital, right? Creating more swelling in the labia minora, the labia major. We'll just say the whole vulva, right? Including the clitoris. Vaginal lubrication begins and the breasts become heavy. Right? So you know you're kind of getting excited and aroused. This is, for me, the best part of sex, the anticipating, building that anticipation, feeling the slow burn of arousal. Like, that is so amazing. Unfortunately, most partners don't care about getting or spending time and excitement, especially male partners, right? So that's phase one, excitement, the intro. This is the phase where I mentioned earlier, women would probably benefit, women would definitely benefit if more time and effort were given in this phase. The second phase is the plateau phase. Again, if we're on the plot diagram, then this is where the rising action takes place. This is where the writer builds in more in-depth understanding of the character. You get more setting, you get more conflict, you get more invested in what's happening, right? And so this is where things are winding up and the tension's building, the suspense is building, the, oh my God, what's gonna happen next is building. For sex, this is copulation. This is the actual act. This is intercourse, okay? Now, here, I think at the beginning of this phase, I'm thinking this is where for most women, the struggle of mind over matter is going to start settling in. I'm thinking this is where the woman's mind is going to start saying, wait, something isn't right. You might want to back out of this situation before it gets too far. I'm thinking right at the beginning of the plateau phase, this is where, you know, right when the thrusting is getting ready to begin, I think this is where most women who are feeling that conflict, I think this is where, you know, we experience it. What happens in the plateau phase, you know, the changes began in phase one are intensified. The vagina continues to swell from increased blood flow. The vaginal walls turn a dark purple. The woman's clitoris becomes highly sensitive. I mean, for women who are extremely sensitive, I mean, it could be almost very painful to be touched. So it runs and hides under the clitoris, which is weird. I mean, not under the clitoris, under the clitoral hood. Which is, you know, kind of, why are you running? This is what needs to be done. But anywho, so yeah, the clitoris plays hide and seek with the clitoral hood. You know, breathing, heart rate, and blood pressure continue to increase. Muscle spasms may begin in the feet, in the face, in the hands, right? There might be some shaking thighs and some shivering running up and down the spine. Muscle tension increases, right? This is where the act of intercourse takes place. And again, this is where most men specifically, this is the phase they love the most. This is where they want to get to. So they spend 0 to 3 to 5 minutes in excitement, and then they want to run to the plateau as fast as they can, right? Run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the ginger thrusting man, right? So this is where they want to be, is at that plateau situation. And then we get to the orgasm. Now, here's the deal, guys. A man could probably orgasm within 3 to 5 minutes. I'm lying. Within 0 to 5 minutes. A man can really hit orgasm, you know, almost immediately. Some of them, quick draw McGraws, right? What is it? Yeah. And really, it's like, what the hell just happened? I think every woman has been in the situation where she is laying there thinking, I know this bastard did not just come. What the hell, right? Every woman's been there at least once or 30 times. Because men hit orgasm as fast as they can. It takes a woman anywhere from 15 minutes to never to orgasm. By the time a woman is just kind of getting there. Usually the guy's already done. Right? So if we're on our plot diagram, this is the turning point. This is where something has changed dramatically and all the conflict is now going to be resolved. When sex happens and we reach orgasm, I mean, for most people, it's a very fast, quick thing, right? I mean, 10, 15 seconds, unless, you know, you're like a champ and you and your partner have really, really put in the work and you're able to prolong your orgasms or create multiple orgasms, mutual multiple orgasms, like, wow. But for the most part, the orgasmic phase is quick. And what happens, you know, you get involuntary muscle contractions, blood pressure, heart rate, and breathing rate are at their highest at this point. Muscle is felt in the feet. Muscle spasms in the feet. There's a forceful release of sexual tension. It's always so funny too. Like, you know, I read a lot of books, I write romance and all that jazz. And like, it's so funny to try, you know, for writers who try to describe what an orgasm feels like. Like science can't describe it. And writers try to describe it and it's like an explosion, you know, into a million pieces or shattering. or a tsunami, you know, racking my body. And I'm always like, what the hell? I don't know what kind of orgasms these people are having when they write stuff like this. I don't know what any of it feels like. So I'm always kind of leery about describing what the orgasm feels like because it's so hard to describe. So, you know, science is like, there's a sexual release, you know, it's like a sonic boom. And it's, I don't know, I have no idea what, how to describe it. And I hate admitting that because, you know, I'm supposed to be able to describe this stuff, but it's so esoteric and it's so different for everyone. I don't want to feel like I'm blowing up into a million pieces. Not at all. Anyhow, that's just me. I don't know. That just ran across my mind. Yeah, in a woman, the muscles of the vagina contract. The uterus also undergoes rhythmic contractions, which is why if you're pregnant and you're in, you know, your pregnancy is not high risk, you're having, quote unquote, a normal pregnancy and you're getting towards the end. Sex is so wonderful because it kind of helps aid and you know, delivery and contractions and all that stuff. So yay you. Some people experience a rash or sex flush. I hate that whole idea of it being called a rash, but you know, you get kind of splotchy red, whatever, or maybe it's just carpet burns or beard burn, who the hell knows, but you know, you get a little sex flush sometimes, you know, or you break out in perspiration. But the orgasm is a totally immersive experience, and it's a wonderful release, right? Again, we just went over phase 2 and 3. Those are the phases most men are like, yes, this is the part I want. This is where I'm working to get to. I need that phase 3. Women, we need more phase 1, and then we get to phase 4. The resolution, the denouement, it is over. Everything is resolved. This is the falling action and the resolution in our plot diagram. And please listen to me. I'm not even going to front. I hate when I've been reading a really good book, right? A book that has just captivated me from the beginning, during the middle, and then the climax is like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. And then it all goes to hell in a handbasket with gasoline drawers on. I mean, when writers don't know how to end the story, it pisses me off. They just find the quickest, easiest way to bring everything to a close and wrap it up in a nice little bow and say, yep, that's it. And they type those two words, the end, leaving me, the reader, completely unsatisfied and wanting, right? Well, just as I expected, trash, right? This is the same thing that happens for most women during phase 4 of the SRC. During this phase, the body slowly returns to its normal level of functioning and swelled and erected parts return to their previous size and color. This phase is kind of, it's supposed to be marked by a sense of well-being, enhanced intimacy. You feel a level of fatigue sometimes, right? This is the phase where you're supposed to feel sated and loved and cared for, and your body is being flooded with oxytocin after, you know, everything else. And this resolution phase, this is where the oxytocin is just kind of pumping through your system and you want to just snuggle and be loved and be cared for and reassured, and you want to bond. And this is where most men check the hell out. There is this period of time where a man needs to, you know, regroup, right? Like, after a man comes, he can't just bounce back immediately, unless, you know, he's Gideon Cross, yeah, or one of the other, you know, romantic heroes who can come 50 times and just stay hard as steel and keep going like the bunny rabbit. But most men have recovery time. Whereas women can orgasm and be ready to go within seconds or minutes. And can probably orgasm again if, you know, if she's sexually healthy and has a sexually aware partner. Excuse me. But for the most part, the fourth phase is never handled with care. And it leaves the woman feeling, excuse me, I'm so sorry. It leaves the woman feeling unsatisfied and wanting for something. So, after doing like this research and looking at the SRC and looking at all these phases and realizing that it's so much stuff going on in the body during sex, and then saying, yeah, probably the beginning of the plateau phase is where a woman's mind is saying, nope, this is not going to work out. This abort mission, this needs to stop now. It got me thinking, like, during sex, am I focusing on sex? Am I focusing on erotic thoughts? Am I focusing on, you know, my partner? Like, what am I focusing on? Like, what is really on my mind during sex? Like, why would my mind be so disengaged that the drugs aren't working to keep me focused on the sexy time? Right? Now, I'm not a betting woman. At all. I don't. But I think a lot of women, especially women, have a lot of negative self-talk during sex. Right? So I go to my favorite source, Psychology Today. And I found an article by Noam Spencer. He's a PhD sexologist. And he cites another sexologist, a French woman, Maria Gionnet, and they concluded that negative thoughts play a key role in women's sexual dysfunction. They distract women from erotic stimulation, produce anxiety and guilt, and diminish sexual arousal and pleasure. So, here's what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking that these negative thoughts probably start to seep in during the end of the excitement phase, the beginning of the plateau phase, you know, especially if there's not enough attention given in the excitement phase to allow the true effects of these, of the natural, you know, drugging our body goes through to actually kick in. Maybe this mind over matter thing has some merit, right? Sex, like all aspects of life, starts in the mind before it ever gets to, you know, the vagina. If the partner isn't doing everything he or she can to get a woman's mind off of stress, off of what happened at the office, off of what the kids need, off of what needs to be done in the house, right? If the partner isn't truly procuring the excitement phase, then perhaps that mind saying, no, put the brakes on this, is your body's way of saying, this person doesn't deserve me. This person doesn't deserve to get to the plateau phase so they can get their rocks off at the orgasm phase because they've not put any effort into building my excitement and taking care of my mind. What if your mind and your body are working together to protect you from those unsatisfied, unwanted feelings that crop up in the fourth phase of the SRC. What if that's what's happening? What if your mind and body are trying to protect your emotional state when they realize your partner isn't putting in the effort necessary to make sure you're going to feel emotionally satisfied, loved, cared for at the end of the sexual response cycle? Mind over matter. So this idea of negative mind chatter, right? You know, people say it's a lot easier to believe the negative shit, right, than it is to believe positive stuff. When it comes to sex and arousal, women need way more positive reinforcements, right? And the best time to kind of get those reinforcements in is during the first phase of the SRC, excitement. You want to ensure the intrusion of these non-erotic thoughts don't mess up the plateau phase. Then it's imperative to spend lots more time in the first phase, excitement. That phase begins with your clothes on outside of the bedroom where there is no sexual anything taking place. The excitement phase begins way, way, way before the plateau phase is even on the docket, right? Sex is not about anxiety and confusion. It is not about guilt and shame. It isn't about doubt. I mean, unless it's your kink, right? If that's your thing, if you like feeling confused and you're turned on because, you know, you're in an anxious situation, if you're turned on by feelings of shame and humiliation, fine. If that's your thing, good. But if it's not your thing, then it really has no place in your sexual relationship. So this negative mind chatter is the number one reason non-erotic thoughts, those thoughts that, you know, keep the excitement running right through the plateau into orgasm, right on into resolution and all throughout the rest of your day, those non-erotic thoughts destroy the plateau phase and obliterates the ability for a woman to reach the orgasm phase. You understand what I'm saying? It's like negative thoughts keep a woman from reaching orgasm. I'm going to say it again. When a woman is plagued with negative thoughts during the sexual response cycle, the chances that she'll reach orgasm are almost nil to none, because you have a constant bombardment of non-erotic thoughts that produce anxiety. And then you get this crazy feedback loop, so that every time sexual arousal takes place, the non-erotic thoughts pop up right along with the arousal. The negative mind chatter pops up right along with the arousal. So now a woman is not associating sexual arousal with feelings of pleasure and safety and love and connection and intimacy. No, a woman is associating sexual arousal with feelings of anxiety, doubt, shame, guilt, confusion. How the hell do you reach the orgasm if you've already told yourself whatever you're feeling is wrong and it's not right? It is the role of the partner to make sure that negative mind chatter and non-erotic thoughts don't set a foothold in their partner's brain. Because if that happens, the mind and the body will work together to protect the emotional body from all of that and will start screaming, nope, this isn't right. This isn't what you want to do. No, no, no. Abort mission, abort mission. Right? So I'm pretty sure my theory's right. Right? I mean, I might be wrong, but I doubt it. I'm no psychologist. I'm no sociologist. I'm no sexologist. I'm me. I'm Ella. I write romance and I pay attention to myself and other people. But I'm going to go out here and say, I'm 100% confident that my mind and my physical body work together to ensure that my emotional and spiritual bodies are protected during sex. If my partner is not taking care to ensure that my emotional and spiritual bodies will be intact after the whole cycle is completed, then my mind and my physical body will begin to work together to extricate me from the situation so that I'm not left feeling fragmented. Wow, I cannot believe that this episode is over so fast. You'll have to join me on Friday for part two of Mind Over Matter, where I get into how we can combat and eradicate negative mind chatter, how we can get rid of those non-erotic thoughts during our sexy time, and how we can help our partners and ourselves write a better story during sex. Thank you so much for joining me in the Enchanted Forest. I always love having you guys here. I would love to hear from you. You have to use the Anchor app, but you can call into the show, leave me a message, ask questions, tell me how amazing the show is, how much you love it, right? And I'll be sure to include it in the next episode, as well as address any questions or messages you leave me. If you've not already followed me on my other social media platforms, please do so. I post regularly, keeping, you know, people up to date on what's happening with me, things like that. Also, if you're into romance and you're looking for what I like to call upmarket romance, check me out on Amazon.com. You can actually get my first novel, Sprise, for free in ebook form until tomorrow. It's a little promotion I'm running. So please go out, get the book, read it, and leave me a review. What else? Yeah, check out my merch shop, Little Enchanted Things. I'll leave a link to all of this stuff in the description. But they're really, really cute. Little t-shirts, sweatshirts, tanks, lots of other different accessories. So check me out. And thank you so much for your support. Until next time. This is Ella reminding you to be brave, be beautiful, and stay enchanted. Bye.
This has been Ella Sean with Enchanted Beast Podcast. Thank you for joining, and remember to stay enchanted.